Welcome to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast. I'm Lisa Fisher, a longtime broadcaster and journalist, and now a health coach based in Arkansas who's been in front of a microphone or a camera since the 1980s. I think of myself as the queen of Arkansas media. I started this podcast in 2020 to help you live a better life. In fact, I hope this podcast is the most informative 45 plus minutes of your week. For this episode, your mind will be blown if you think lowering cholesterol will prevent heart disease. I have clinical nutritionist Dr. Johnny Bowden on, who's the co-author of the outstanding book, The Great Cholesterol Myth, and you'll get to meet him right after this. I'm recording this ad, I'm pulling back the curtain, at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, because I just finished a delightful dinner that included Ralston Family Farms rice. I tell you that because I talk all the time about being a meat-based eater, meaning about 80% of what I consume is meat. And then the rest is beef, butter, bacon, and eggs, rice, and fresh fruit in season. And this is March. There is no fresh fruit in season where I am. So we had rice with our bowl of beef and put some cheese on top. I think we had avocados, but I don't, now that I remember, I forgot to put it on there. And some salsa, you know, things like that. But I say that because rice goes with everything. And at Ralston Family Farms, they have a plethora of recipes to help accompany your meal. It can be the main dish in your family. I don't care what you eat. I just know what's best for me. And including rice in my diet all the time is great. And you know, you can do the resistant starch rice by letting it cool, putting it in the refrigerator. Google that one because it helps lower your insulin load, which is really fascinating about it. But it's a healthy part of any diet. And you can get all the good rices. There are six varieties and there's rice grits. Girl, that stuff is so good. Rice grits with cheese and a little cream cheese. Yes, so good. They have it all. And you know what? They're there to answer your questions about the farm and their rice. And a Ralston will take your call. RalstonFamilyFarms.com. If you've ever listened to my podcast, you know that I've talked about my friend Pat Becker-Wallace, who's a philanthropist in Arkansas and in Oklahoma, in fact. And she devotes a lot of her time, attention, and resources to help different organizations. One is the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra here. Another one is anything to do with dogs and animals and the rescues. In fact, her love extends beyond that. At dogtalktv.com, where I want you to go and check out the books, because one of them is a book she's written and all the proceeds benefit a different organization. The book is A Carriage for Cowboy. It is so sweet, and it's about it's kind of an old-timey sport of carriage riding and driving. So it benefits the American Driving Society Incorporated, and that supports carriage drivers in the United States and Canada through education, events, rules for competition, and licensing of officials. It's a great family event that you'll now see it at different competitions. So she's written this book, A Carriage for Cowboy, which is about her daughter and her daughter's horse, Cowboy, and it is so sweet. Adding that to your library is a good thing. Adding any of the books from dogtalktv.com is a very good thing because many of the proceeds, if it's one of her books, definitely goes to charitable organizations. She helps the rescues here, as I was saying, in central Arkansas, but there may be one near you that it helps. If you love animals, go to that website, buy some books. You'll be thankful you did. dogtalktv.com.
She won most talkative in high school, and she has been running her mouth ever since. Welcome to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast with your host, Lisa Fisher.
Okay, I love that I have a guest who's going to love my high cholesterol panel because it doesn't mean a hill of beans, does it, Johnny?
I would not go that far. That's a pretty tough introduction.
I'm quite an exaggerator.
It doesn't matter what your butt says.
I know. Well, tell me what does matter when we're looking at cholesterol. Okay.
Not total cholesterol. Let's start with the biggest myth, the dumbest thing that doctors still treat based upon this number, which is total cholesterol. And I cannot say this better than the great Dr. Peter Attia, who, right, I'm sure you know who is.
Yes.
The audience may not. No, he is the author of the best book ever written on anti-aging. And I wrote a book on anti-aging. So I'm telling you, this is as good as it gets.
He's a longevity expert for my listeners.
He's the longevity expert right now. True. There are others and stuff, but his background is so intense and he knows so much about all these things. And this is what he said in his book in chapter 2 when he takes on cardiovascular disease. And I'm quoting.
Okay.
Total cholesterol. Ladies and gentlemen, that's that number that if it goes over 200, your doctor reaches for a statin prescription. Total cholesterol has as much to do with you having a heart attack as your hair color.
I love it.
No joke.
I know. You're not laughing. The audience, I think, is laughing.
It would be hysterical if it weren't for the fact that the majority of the 800 medical doctors in the country don't know that. Now, LDL is another story. We have in our book, Steve and I, Sinatra and I, I think you need to know, Lisa, that sometimes when misinformation is so rampant and so out there, calorie counting is the secret to weight loss and low-fat diets will prevent heart disease. When it's really out there, you sometimes, and you're trying to do a correction on this massive delusion, you sometimes overstate the case. So, for example, in the early days of low carb, when we were coming up with low carb, everybody believed calories were all that counted when it came to weight loss and, you know, most other things, but certainly weight loss. And we kept screaming, it's not the calories, it's the hormones. The calories only matter in terms of which hormones they turn on and off.
Right.
And we kept screaming this and screaming this. And it wound up, we were so agitated, and I think we overstated our case so much that we wound up saying calories don't even matter. And that's not true.
Right.
They do matter. They're not the star of the show. They're not the main attraction. They're a supporting player. We got that wrong. It's hormones that are really controlling most of it. But calories do have a part. They do make a difference. You can't eat 11,000 calories of fat in a suit or anything that doesn't raise blood sugar and say, well, it doesn't raise blood sugar, so I'm fine. It does matter. And it's kind of the same thing here. The old-fashioned cholesterol test that gives you three numbers, total cholesterol, which you don't even look at it.
Okay, good.
LDL and HDL is kind of equivalent. I can go through the history of it very quickly and you can see how we got here. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, so 1963, when you weren't born and I was very young, they used to have health fairs to try to educate the public about various health metrics that most people were not aware of. Remember, there's no internet.
Which is what TV commercials do now to brainwash people. But I digress. Go ahead.
But you digress. Okay, good. That's another rabbit hole. I'd be happy to go down with you. But the point is here, we had very rudimentary educational tools to kind of explain to the public, you know, blood pressure is, you can't imagine the level of the lack of knowledge about this stuff. It was not just something that was in the public square. Nobody talked about it. We didn't have a Whole Foods. We had health food stores for health nuts.
Right.
People who were interested in their health were health nuts.
That's right.
So different time. And here's these health fairs, and there's doctors in the booth, and they're going, we're going to measure your cholesterol. Now, cholesterol is very important for heart disease. They take a little fingerprint and finger prick, and they put it on a thing and say, oh, 206. Excellent. That's a good number. Remember, by then 240 was the cutoff. They keep dumbing it down.
I thought it was even higher. Or no, is it higher in Europe?
It was 240 when I was a kid.
All right.
And that total number was the best they had then. But as time went on, looking a little more closely under the hood, better instruments, they said, well, you know what? Cholesterol, first of all, it doesn't travel in water. It would be like emptying a bottle of oil in the ocean and then expecting it to get to the other side. It doesn't travel in water.
So does that mean it's viscous?
It has to travel in a boat, in a container.
Okay, got it.
And the container is called the lipoprotein.
Right.
So the lipoprotein, take notes on this, folks. This is probably my most important message to you, or one of them. The lipoprotein is the boat. Cholesterol is the cargo.
Got it.
There. Now, here's misinformation number two. There is no such thing as good and bad cholesterol. Because if you look at cholesterol under the microscope, it's the same cholesterol. Here's an example. I am Johnny Bowden. I'm a passenger on a train. I go to Grand Central Station. I get on a train to go to Philadelphia. Or I decide to get on a train to go to San Francisco. It's the same me, the same passenger on a different train. So what they noticed is that the trains kind of come in two different sizes. They're two different densities. One is, they're not exactly the same train that this cholesterol is getting on. One of them is called, one goes to Philadelphia, one goes to San. One is called high density because if you put it in liquid, it, guess what? It's high dense, it sinks. And the other one is low density because guess what? It floats. That's all that means. A low density lipoprotein and a high density lipoprotein. And because we didn't know much more than that, but we saw that there were some different functions and it looked like we kind of, in a massive act of oversimplification, decided to call the LDLs the bad cholesterol and the HDL the good cholesterol. And we have been stuck with this moronic division, which is equivalent to giving medical diagnoses based on if you're short or fat.
Got it.
Or short or tall. Mm-hmm. That's all you got, tall and short.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's a factor, but would you like to have a medical diagnosis and an operation based on like, oh, she's short, she's tall, she's fat, she's thin? It's idiotic. So there's no such thing as good and bad. There are two different types of lipoproteins. So we got into this habit of like, let's look at your LDL, your bad cholesterol. And if that gets too high, now we're going to be concerned. Okay, there's a little bit of truth in that, but it's minor. That was that method of looking at cholesterol was equivalent to the flip phone. The flip phone was a big increase in convenience, in accuracy, and a lot of things from those phones that looked like, they used to look like when I was a kid.
The size of a Stanley cup.
They literally look like Buicks.
Buick to your head.
Pictures, black and white pictures on Google Images of guys walking, you know, on the street with this monstrosity of a satellite phone. Now we got the flip phone. We got the little Z thing, and that is the hippest thing, and everybody wants them. And it's a big improvement. HDL, LDL was a big improvement over total. In 2024, when you got an iPhone 15 and a Galaxy, whatever it is, 19, you're going to still use the flip phone? It's like using one of those, I forgot the name of it, it begins with an A, to use as a counter.
Abacus. Yeah, an abacus. So
we now know that there's LDL, this little LDL, there's big LDL, there's LP little a, there's LDL 3, 3A, there's HDL 2, 2A. There's like 13 different subtypes. And we can measure them.
There are 13 different subtypes?
And there are tests that do that. And we're still with the cockamamie good and bad cholesterol? Are you kidding? So that's what matters and doesn't matter. So there is a problem with this new test. It's not even new. It's 20 years old. Every lab offers it. LabCorp has a version of it. Quest Labs has a version of it. And everything smaller than those two. And those two are pretty much the main labs in the country. They've had it for years. Insurance doesn't cover it.
Ugh.
So your doctor won't order it.
Hate that.
So you got this test that gives you really valuable information about your cholesterol, which I want to get into in a minute, because it's really not the cholesterol we care about, it's the lipoprotein. That's the big take-home. So we have these tests that have a lot of good information. One of the things we want to know about cholesterol, and I'm going to call them by their correct name, which is what we want to know about your lipoproteins, because it's your lipoproteins that get stuck in the arterial wall, get damaged, release cholesterol, then all kinds of bad stuff happens. But that's like blaming the firemen for the fire or umbrellas for the rain. I mean, if you're a Martian, you're looking at the United States, you're looking from a distance and you go, it's raining, all these umbrellas, I guess the umbrellas caused the rain. No, the cholesterol spilled out when you had an accident.
Mm-hmm.
It's the cargo in the boat. So if I'm in charge of a marina, as long as we're using the boat analogy, and my job is to prevent accidents, What's the number one thing I want to know? How many boats are in the water? Do I care how much beer they're carrying? Do I even care how many passengers they have? Do I even care what brand of towel they have in the washroom? Or do I care how many vessels are there? Because they're the things that bump up against each other and cause crashes. In a similar way, what we want to know is how many LDLs do you have in your bloodstream? Now, they're called particles. That's technical talk for LDL. They're particles. How many particles? And the test that you want to get is the particle test. It will tell you LDLP, not LDLC, but LDLP for how many of those little buggers are there, because the more there are in the road, or the more there are in the boat, or the more people there are in the bar, the more likelihood somebody's going to step on somebody's foot, there's going to be an accident, a drink is going to spill, a boat is going to crash. You need to know the number of particles. Who cares how much cholesterol they're carrying? Now, I will give you the other side of this. The particle test is far superior. If the particle test points to risk, but the conventional test doesn't, particle test is always right. Sometimes
it always
in the same direction. Sometimes your particle number is low and your LDL number is low, and either would produce the same diagnosis. But in case they're not, which happens a lot, especially with pre-diabetics and that, if one points in a good direction and one doesn't, you got to listen to the particle. And getting a prescription based on less than that, I don't think is what Peter Attia would call medicine 3.0. It's kind of old-fashioned medicine. So that number goes up. And, well, what kind of LDL is it? For example, LDL comes in two different sizes. And they call it A or and B.
Mm-hmm.
Think of B as bad. So okay. A looks like a big fluffy cotton ball. And it's not good for you, but it's completely neutral from a cardiovascular point of view. There's no damage. It does no good. It's just a cotton ball. LDL-B is like a BB gun pellet. It's inflamed, it's atherogenic, it's oxidized, it's a nasty little pellet that gets stuck into the arterial wall. That's the kind you want. If you don't know if most of your LDL is A or B, you are missing a very important piece of information in terms of your risk. I am a perfect example of this. For 100 years, my cholesterol test, the old-fashioned, before I became a functional nutritionist and knew what I was talking about, my test was wonderful. My total was always under 200. My LDL was, I don't know, one. It was every doctor that looked at it and said, well, you got no problems there, until I saw the light, you know, learned what I learned about nutrition and health and functional medicine. Started ordering the real test. And boy, did that come back with a different result.
Mm.
So here, my LDL is perfectly normal. My particle number is in the high red zone of risk, completely concealed by this, his LDL is this and his HDL. But meanwhile, you got gang members in the LDL and you got scholarship students. You got a lot of different kinds of LDL. I didn't know. And I had too many of them. And they were the wrong kind. They were the small little atherogenic.
And you want the
pattern
big.
B.
You want big, fluffy, right?
You want A, pattern A.
You want A. And you can change
that, by the way, because I was B and now I'm pattern A. So it can be changed.
When you changed your pattern from BBs
to A, and I also brought my particles down.
Okay. And then what did it do to total cholesterol? Or it doesn't even matter, does it?
Doesn't make any difference at all. If it lowers your particles, it's doing good.
Wow, we're misled. We are chasing the wrong rabbit.
Yeah.
This is insane. Okay. Let's talk about different diagnostic tools. Do you like the Boston Heart? Do you like the CAC score? Do you like things like that, looking at the heart?
Any one of them. A Cleveland heart panel is
Cleveland,
the one cardiologist uses. The Boston one's great. Cardiac IQ, I think that's Questlabs. LabCorp does something called the LPIR, IR standing for insulin resistance, which I hope we'll get to talk about, biggest metabolic plague of the 21st century.
Absolutely.
So there are different versions of this, but they're all like advanced cardiac profile. They're not the good and bad BS.
And so therefore that could, because this is what I'm a longtime intermittent faster. I'm a certified health coach, and I tell all my clients, please go get a fasting lab value and let's talk about C-reactive protein. Your fasting to see what your insulin is, fasting insulin.
Oh, God, that's such an important test, right, Lisa. I try to get every client I see.
And do you know how many doctors will push back and say?
They won't. No, they won't.
I just tell them to run over here.
When it comes to this stuff, it's just.
It's ridiculous. I call it the smoking gun. I call it the smoking gun of health is fasting insulin. And if you can, like mine's at 2.2. So I don't care that I have high cholesterol and I don't even know the numbers, but I'm going to go check them out. But all this to say that I just tell people you can go to anylabtestnow.com and you can walk in off the street. I hate that people have to do that, but in order for them, so they're not taking unnecessary medications because my doctor said that my so-and-so's high. And I go, well, it doesn't really matter. Let's look at your fasting insulin value and lab value and see if you're insulin resistant, your HOMA IR.
This may seem strange coming from me for those of you who've heard me before, because I'm not friendly to American medicine as it's practiced here, but this really isn't your doctor's fault.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
It's very easy to blame them for being stupid or for not knowing this literature or for ignoring it or for being set in the way, and all of which may be true in some cases. But the fact is, Big Pharma controls the narrative in this country on almost everything. You really can't fully appreciate that till you've lived through some battles with them and understood how much influence they have. 60% of all cable advertising is Pfizer and Moderna and Merck. And when they control when advertising is the main source of revenue, as it is in media, and I've been writing for magazines for 30 years, the advertisers have a very big say in what you report and what you say. And they can shift the narrative, not in some conspiratorial way, but give you an example. I wrote many years, I can say this now because it's... Years ago, I wrote for Clean Eating Magazine. It's a great magazine. Had a wonderful editor. They really wanted to do good stuff. I was doing something on gluten. And they came to me very sweetly. Like, we would never interfere. But you should know that most of our advertisers make products with gluten and wheat.
Right.
So be aware of that. That's all, please. And it's a perfectly reasonable and understandable request. And you see what happens when people pull their advertising from TV. They may have tremendous power. Big Pharma literally controls areas of communication. And the pandemic was the most obvious and clear example to those of us who were looking. But it has done this for years. And that's why your doctor doesn't prescribe the test. One doctor explained this to me. He said, I know about that test. And of course, that's a test we should be giving. You want to know what happens if I prescribe it? I get a visit from Blue Cross.
Oh.
We see you're prescribing some unusual tests here, Mr. Dr. Davis. I'm going to have to audit your practice and see if you still qualify to get Blue Cross Blue Shield. Dude, you can't believe how this business is run and how little it has to do with patient care.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking. It is. Oh, that's so heartbreaking. I had dinner the other night with two physicians, and the doctors, one doctor who's 52 said, for some reason, wanted to bring it up. Well, I don't take any statins. And I went, how did we get from there to here? Like, how did this come up? And I said, well, same. I never would. And my husband said the same thing. But the physician who practices internal medicine said, well, I've got a story of a man who ate low fat and didn't have a heart attack. And a man who did eat high fat had the heart attack. And so then I was going to chime in. I said, well, you know, the nature.com study about longevity showed that low cholesterol was actually a higher risk for mortality and other things. And
accident,
my husband,
suicide.
Accident, so many things, right? It makes you shake hands with the air, like our current president. I mean, he shakes hands with the air. He's on a statin. You lose your mind. And my husband's across the table from me and he went, honey, he goes, zip it. And I go, what? And he said, they only know what Big Pharma told them. And They're not going to listen to you. And you're, I mean, he was saying it politely. He was laughing and everybody kind of snickered. But later, my husband just said, you're not going to win the battle. You can go in individually and talk to people, but you're not going to tell a doctor who has a big pharma rep who comes in with a tray of cookies and an incentive that dangles for them to win the trip to Aruba that he or she shouldn't write statins. I said, well, I wasn't saying that. I was just saying, look at how valuable cholesterol is. He said, you're not going to win the battle. And because I'm just a certified health coach, but I just thought it was interesting that my husband's take was the doctor doesn't read the research. The big pharma rep tells them what their industry-sponsored research told them.
That's 100% true.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it is such
and by the way, we didn't, folks, we didn't make this up. I don't know about Lisa, but I have a lot of friends who are doctors. They tell me this. They tell me this. I'm in a low-carb clinicians group, which half of them are like on staff at hospital, or they're tenured professor, and they write these horror stories that you can't even believe. So this is, I'm not a medical doctor, and I'm certainly not in the field. I'm in the field of talking to the public and education and stuff like that. So I don't do this research, but I hear from my friends who do, and it's hair-raising.
Well, what happens is they have to go into functional medicine, or they have to be in a no insurance model, concierge medicine or something, in order to see these patients. I interviewed Dr. Philip Ovedia a year and a half ago, and his story is amazing. That his book is, I want you to stay off my operating table. He's a cardiovascular surgeon. He was, I can't remember where he is now. Maybe he's in Florida. But his story of intermittent fasting, which is how I'm alive today, and low carb. He also, and carnivore. He's really more carnivore, I think, now. And I think of those people as people, and I've said this about Callie Means, who was on Tucker Carlson's podcast recently, who, you know, pulls the curtain back and says, look what Big Pharma's doing. I think they have a target on their back. You know, they're going to wake up dead one day. I don't mean to overstate that. I'm saying that seriously. When you start messing with the people shaking the moneymakers, somehow, you know, things just happen to people. So do you feel like that, not that your life's in jeopardy, I'm not saying that, but that sometimes you have a target because you are pointing the finger saying, guys, let's look at something else. I am sitting upright and delightful today because of a team of people who can facilitate that. It's because I have bioidentical hormone replacement therapy from Compounding at cornerstone.com. Now, those of us in Arkansas know them as Cornerstone Pharmacy. Now, they have different owners at different locations. So I've been seeing Brittany Marsh for this for years. And that's the one in the Simmons Bank building here in West Little Rock. But what's important is knowing kind of the science behind BHRT, the bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, and tweaking it because different lab values tell you these things. Well, I only know that because Brittany has taught me so much. I've also learned from the nice folks there, Compounding at cornerstone.com, you can order some of the tests to see what your hormones are doing, and you get 20% at checkout if you use the word Lisa at checkout. So that means you can get the Dutch test. That means you can get the saliva test or any of the supplements there, because I meet a lot of my coaching clients there who are in Arkansas, and we always walk through the supplement, the candy aisle, because sometimes they might need ashwagandha. They might need, I don't know, you know, I don't give medical advice, but we just talk about some things that can optimize their health. And we know that proper supplementation with the proper label, you know, the right company, just don't get it from the big box store. But you can get it there at compoundingatcornerstone.com. I love going to the website for marlsgate.com. Marlsgate.com, it's hard to even define it in just a few sentences, but it is this historic property in Scott, Arkansas, a small community about 15 minutes from downtown Little Rock. And on this property that was built in the 1850s, the original home is there. The pecan orchards, the acres of beautiful property, tenderly, lovingly cared for now by the Talbot family, just the third family of owners with this property. And they bought it in 2017. And wow, what they are doing in restoring it and keeping it up. And it's impressive. And not just Marlsgate, but it's everything really the Talbot family what they're doing in this community. Bo is a hustler, and so is Martha Ellen. And that means you can see what they're doing with their heirloom foods, the culinary arts, the lodging they have by land and water. I love the restaurant, Scott Station. We're crazy about that restaurant. But for the rest of you, if you're wondering what Marl's Gate is, it could be the perfect event location for your treasured event, because this isn't just a venue. This is somebody's home, and it turns into a memory that's talked about for generations. Find out more by going to the website, marlsgate.com.
No, I'm too small to make a major difference in that. It's I think, you know, if you're a public figure like Russell Brand, you know, they'll go after you for saying stuff because you have tremendous influence. I mean, who's listening? Yes. It's not that I have none. It's that I'm not a big, just not a big enough fish to get their attention.
Yeah.
I did two things that did provoke a reaction. I mean, when Steve and I went on the Dr. Oz show, a bunch of physicians from Columbia, I think Presbyterian, wrote a letter in, like, how you're having these cracks on, and they're all going, you know, this is terrible. There was one, but there was a documentary that was done by Marianne Demensi. She is a PhD from Columbia Journalism School, who was a host of a television show in Australia. And she's also as educated about nutrition and health as you can be if that's not your field. And she has a PhD in journalism. So she did a documentary.
I love her. What's her name?
Marianne Demensi, Demensi.
Okay.
And she did a documentary. If I'm getting a spelling name, if you look this up, you'll see it.
I'll figure it out.
Was on YouTube. It was from the Australian Broadcasting Company, which is their equivalent of the BBC or the, you know, really good national. And it was called The Heart of the Matter. And in this, she interviewed what might be called a group of cholesterol skeptics, meaning that we were people who did not buy the conventional. It's not that we rejected all of it. It's not that we rejected the role of lipoproteins and heart disease and oxidative. No, but the whole scale, simplistic belief that heart disease was caused by cholesterol and statins saved lives. We questioned that from different angles and for different reasons. And to give you an idea, it wasn't just cockamamie Johnny Bowden, the nutritionist. It was John Abramson from Harvard, who's been on the faculty there for 20 years and who has testified for more drug trials than any other physician in America. It was people like that, really solid, credentialed people. The documentary came out and there was a letter writing campaign in Australia engineered by a PR company. I'm not sure who paid them. And literally they got stories placed saying, 30, listen to this. I mean, if you want to have a made up shit, 31,000 people will die if they listen to the advice in this movie. We call upon YouTube to take this documentary down. We call upon the Australian Broadcasting Company to renounce it. We call it. And briefly, they got it taken down. I think it's still up there now. But this was a serious documentary. This was not a hit piece. It was not a conspiratorial. This is a PhD in journalism, Columbia Journalism School. She's pretty damn good. And she was presenting this very fairly with extremely sober and smart people who were saying, guys,
let's look at this.
This isn't adding up quite right.
Yes, right. And that's what we've been saying in the intermittent fasting world and the low carb world, all these things, because, you know, the government still pushes 8 to 11 servings of whole wheat a day or whatever. And we're saying, no, run from it and eat the steak. Okay. Let's talk about then some numbers. And I think Peter T has talked about it and Huberman and others. There's some statistic that said in the research, the side-by-side study, people are on statins for 5 years. It increased their longevity, their lifespan by like 3 days. Have you heard that one?
I think it's less.
That just means it makes, I mean, I guffaw.
It's somewhere in there. It might be less.
It's like, okay, then 2 days. So it may increase your lifespan.
Insignificant amount. I mean, no, a day of life is not insignificant.
That's
but when you
right.
think about the fact that this is a $31 billion a year industry, that and it is literally bigger than Major League Baseball.
Wow. And the side and effects. The side effects from statins.
I have an interesting story about
shaking hands with the air. People say the aches and pains are supposed to be terrible.
Okay, so
cognitively.
As I've gotten older, I've tried to be less polarizing and less absolute.
Me too.
So let's say this. Statins are not this evil thing. How they're being used, prescribed, and promoted borders on evil. But it's a drug. It has some effects on some people. It has a mildly anti-inflammatory effect. And given that most of us are just walking inflammation factories, that probably does a little bit of good. It thins the blood a little, like turning it maybe from the consistency of ketchup to red wine. These are decent things. They have nothing to do with lowering cholesterol. And statins were originally tested on middle-aged men with previous heart disease. And in middle-aged men, this is a narrow little demographic. It's not nothing, but it's a section.
Yes.
In middle-aged men with previous existing diagnosed heart disease, it lowered the risk of a second heart attack. That was called secondary prevention. You've already had your first heart attack. Let's work on preventing the secondary. Preventing a first heart attack is called primary prevention. Mm-hmm. And the data on that is not really that great.
Wow.
And not only that, but on no planet, if there isn't a market influence, would you take data from middle-aged men and start to say, well, that probably applies to 13-year-old girls. And we should definitely put that 74-year-old woman on this because, I mean, after all, it worked on middle-aged men. So that's when they started doing brand extension on the statins. Say, there was a campaign at one point. I think it got stopped, but they were telling mothers, your 13-year-old has high cholesterol. Let's get
it
early.
Stop it.
Do you think I could make that up? They were putting 13-year-olds on statins because Mrs. Jones, your kid, you know, he's got.
Oh, my
it's not only is it medical malpractice, it's probably criminal.
It's criminal. No, that is what I was going to say. It's criminal. It's child abuse. The same thing we did by making, the last few years. It makes my blood boil. All right. Well, let's talk about, really, you and I know the problem in this country is obesity is an issue. And it is a symptom of insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, and all the things. So let's talk about how you turned your cholesterol profile around what you did with nutrition, just in the event if somebody's interested, because you have your PhD in clinical nutrition, right?
I don't have my particle numbers far from in the green.
Okay.
And I'm always fighting to make sure it doesn't go into pattern B, the bad one with small guys. So it's an ongoing fight. But when the times when I get my best numbers are when I'm the most low carb. And again, I don't necessarily think that's right for every human being on the planet.
I understand.
But for my metabolism and my genetics, I think low junk food is right for everyone on the planet.
Right.
There is just no person who is genetically adapted to junk food. But as hard as I am on vegans and as much as I don't believe as a rule, it's a generally healthy lifestyle, I can't deny the existence of a Joel Fuhrman, who's a very fit, very healthy guy in his 60s who looks 20 years younger. And obviously that works for him. And I'd like to just point out, folks, he didn't start being vegan until he was like 20. So, I hear about people who are raising kids on vegan diets, my blood boils.
Criminal.
But
again,
don't want to do that. I'm just saying that obviously people have different genetic makeups, hormonal makeups, different, all kinds of things. And we can't really make these assumptions that what works for one person works for everybody. But
that's
in general, for me, a lower carb, higher fat diet.
Me too.
Coupled with intermittent fasting and sticking to it. I don't always do it, but when I did, and, intermittent fasting like that, and, better sleep.
Oxidative stress.
Had a very, very salutary effect on my particle number and on my particle size.
Well, plus, I always say to my clients that I can help them save money because with intermittent fasting, you eat less. And plus, I will make it so that I will have you adapt your circadian rhythm so that you're getting sunlight in the morning, sunlight in the afternoon, vitamin D during the day. You're going to sleep well. You're going to drink more water. If you're married, I tell people, I hope you have good sex. I mean, if you're not, I'm saying whatever, wherever you are in your life with your relationship.
Oh, listen, I struggled with that for a long time because if you talk to many of my colleagues in a private area, they will all tell you exactly what you said. And
oh, really?
Whether you have a partner or not,
right.
Getting out of touch with your own sexuality and your own ability to orgasm is, I can't show you a double blind study on this, but go find somebody that knows what they're talking about that disagrees with this. It's really important to keep orgasming.
And it's therapeutic.
I mean, just as a physical thing, physiological thing, it is an anti-aging strategy. So, and more important than the orgasming is the findings of the happiness study. 85-year mm-hmm. study going on to this day. It's in the fourth generation. Fourth person is now the leader of the study. They've studied four generations of people to find out what makes people live long and live happy. What makes them the happiest? What makes them the most fulfilled? What eating patterns are associated with that? What exercise patterns? And here's the variable that comes up so far high above every other thing that you can imagine, relationships. Number one, it's also number two, it's also number three, and then you can talk about the other stuff. They went to Sardinia, and this is good take home, folks. Mm-hmm. Peter Attia talks a lot about how do we stay healthy till we're 100?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's an engineer and a mathematician in addition to a cancer surgeon. He's the most brilliant man
in
America.
He's a genius. Yes, he is a genius.
So he sits there with his charts, and he goes, how much muscle is lost per decade? How much oxygen capacity? What will we have to do to reverse engineer what we should do in our 50s in order to be able to be a kick-ass 100-year-old? What do we need to do in our 60s? And by kick-ass 100-year-old, all he means is a set of functional things that you mm-hmm. should be able to do to live in society, be able to carry groceries to the door, be able to maybe put a light suitcase in the upper bin in the airline, just functional stuff. What would you need to do now to do that? And you've got this whole spreadsheet of stuff he's got to do, right? Balance and stability and aerobics and walking. And okay, put that aside for a minute. And you got all the biohackers following Huberman going, I'm going to do a cold plunge and I'm going to do it. All that to be that 100-year-old. Okay, so they say, great goal. Why don't we go to the people who've already done it? Why don't we go to the people who are 100, who are kick-ass, who are herding sheep in Sardinia and ask them and observe them and see what do they do? So they go to Sardinia, one of the blue zones, the one that has the highest population of male 100-year-olds who are functioning. And they try to learn some lessons, some observational lessons. They came away with three lessons. It had nothing to do with cold plunges. It had nothing to do with low-carb diets. It had, here's the three things. You ready? One, live in an area where there's lots of steps.
Mm-hmm.
And then they show a picture of Sardinia.
I know. Isn't that incredible?
Right? Which you can translate to just walk every day constantly, right? Number two, spend a lot of time around gentle animals. Most of these guys were shepherds. Well,
that
think
is so
about
sweet.
It. What are you filling your head with? Not Instagram.
My goodness. Right.
Think what you're filling your head with if you're around sheep or dogs or puppies or kids. What is it? What's the message? And the third and most important takeaway from these kick-ass 100-year-olds in Sardinia was make friends and family your number one priority. They take long lunches. The men talk about their feelings. They laugh. They do this, mm-hmm. they that. Their family and friends are number one. And if you go back to studies like the Rosetta phenomena in Pennsylvania, all these people with every risk factor in the world, for they should have been dead at 30, they're in the coal mines, for God's sake. They eat lard all day long. Why do they have no heart disease? 10 years of research, they said, because they've got relationships. They've got a family structure.
Oh my gosh, you made me cry. That was true.
So these were hard scrapple people. They all came from the same area of Europe, and they had Sunday dinners, and they gardened, and they square danced, and whatever they did, they were completely connected in a community. And that was so protective that they had vanishingly low level. Considering what their risk factors were, they had almost no heart disease. So take home for that is yes, pay attention to lab values. Yes, don't ignore the possibility of oxidized cholesterol causing problems. Mm-hmm. All of those metrics, pay attention. But don't ignore these huge, big modulators of health and risk and longevity, which are your relationships, your kids, your parents, your partners, your AA group, your atheist group. I don't care what it is. You're something that you're doing with other people. And bonus points if it helps others. Because there is something physiological, hormonal, neurotransmitter-wise about giving to other people, being in service, that literally modulates health parameters. And if we ignore that, we just concentrate on lab values, we are missing a big piece of the picture.
I want to drop the mic here, but I still have so many things to ask you. I mean, that's such an incredible moment. Wait, one more thing. So the patient, the person who's listening, because I get this all the time, of course, by law, I do not give medical advice. I'd send them things like
and
your book.
I have to say this. I say the same thing.
Right. I tell people, read this book. It's written by an MD and a PhD. But people are, for some reason, feel threatened by their provider when they say, I want you to look at my particle size, or I don't want to take your statin. I don't know. Yeah. I'm born a Jew from Jersey. I've got chutzpah. I can go in there and I can ask anything. But I'm down in the South where people are sweet and they have a hard time. What do you suggest?
It's beyond my pay grade.
Yeah.
What you're dealing here with is entrenched beliefs, social class.
Yes.
Power positions. You know, here's a very fast story. There was a really, really awful crash in Korean Airlines decade ago or so. And they did endless investigation to try to find out, how did this go wrong? The signals were here, and the assistant pilot or whatever it is could have. He had to see it. You know what the answer was? Their status thing was so embedded in their heads that the assistant who saw that these things were did not feel he could question the pilot's judgment, even though the pilot was going off the rails with this. And he just, that's not, you know, he knows what he's doing because he's the pilot. And that's how my parents grew up with the doctor.
Yes, that's exactly right.
You have a lot of that. And it's, again, it's not necessarily the doctor's fault. There's a system in which, you know, the doctor is God. And I believe that profession attracts a lot of people whose personality lends themselves to that, maybe more than its share of authoritarian personalities. And it's just a guess. Certainly, many people go into medicine to heal and to make a difference in their motivation, but the system is so stacked against that. When you talked about, like, go to somebody who's outside the insurance company, you can't practice what we're talking about and be embedded in that because the insurance companies call the shots.
That's who we should be wagging our finger at on Capitol Hill. That's right in our fiber now. I mean, it's a part of the system. And it's the frogs in the warm water, and we don't realize it's boiling. You know, it's where we are. Okay, nutrition-wise, what supplements do you like maybe for cardiovascular health or other things?
I'm not a one-size-fits-all person in diet, in any area of life. I am asked a lot about, like, well, what's most important? I showed you the two packs of supplements I take every day, you'd say, well, that's a crazy person. I get that. Not everybody's going to take 58 things. So I'm often asked, well, what's the most important? And again, impossible to answer, but I can tell you what I think are three that the greatest number of people, the greatest percentage of people will benefit from the most for the least number of pills. And those three are fish oil, magnesium, and vitamin D.
Yeah, vitamin D you can get for free outside is what I always say.
Yeah,
so fish oil, and I do supplement because I have vitiligo and it helps with that. So I get that.
I live in Southern California and I am an avid tennis player. I play almost 2 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Awesome.
In the sun.
Awesome.
And I take 7,000.
Oh, you still do? Okay.
Yeah.
And no sunscreen. I assume you use no sunscreen. Yeah, you don't want a sunburn.
No,
fish oil, though, sometimes is rancid, I've heard. And so
control thing that has nothing to do with fish oil. That is why I have an article on my website, How and Where to Buy Vitamins. It tells you to buy from a dispensary, which is a dispensary is authorized to sell what they used to call doctor brands, the high quality brands that they don't have at the store. And they vet every shipment. They check, they assay. You're not getting rancid. from a dispensary. And I show you how to open an account, get on your own, and any brand that they carry is going to be tested.
Great. Is that through FullScript?
Well, FullScript merged with Emerson Ecologics. It's one company now. So yes, okay. FullScript. Yeah. One company, Barleen's, actually is on the official doctor thing, the FullScript and those professional distributors, but you can also get that in the stores. So once in a while, there are brands that cross over both doctor brands and that's Barleen's is a consumer brand that is really, really good with that. But it's not the only one. There's a company called Big Bold Health, which was started by Jeffrey Bland, the legendary Jeffrey Bland, who taught every nutritionist worth their salt, you know, certainly me. And half the people who have internet sites and followings were Jeffrey Bland students. And he started a company, Big Bold Health, and they have a fantastic fish oil. As I mentioned, so does Barleen's. There are really good ones. But rancidity means it's crappy product.
It smells.
Or it's expired.
Right.
Or,
yeah, it smells. Old. So vitamin D, fish oil. What was the third one?
Magnesium.
Oh, I'm so doped up on magnesium. That's how I get through my day. I mean, it has changed my, I also do salt every day. I mean, I do a lot of salt, Celtic sea salt or the Element, but magnesium.
No, Element is fantastic. Great product.
It is, especially for an intermittent faster. I do long, 48-hour fast or 42 to 48-hour fast once a week. So I'm doing it for deep autophagy. I mean, I keep my skin clean. You know, I'm 61 years old.
In fasting. I get it.
Right. I love it. Love it. Love it. I love what it does for my skin, my vision. I mean, all the things. But so I should get my PhD just in salt and magnesium. Magnesium, I use Bioptimizers. Is there another brand you prefer? Because it has so many different types in it. But do you like any others?
Well, you know, magnesium has to, like most minerals, has to be bound to something. So if you look at the back of a magnesium bottle, it says magnesium 400 milligrams. Magnesium citrate, magnesium carbonate, magnesium glycinate, magnesium threonate. Mm-hmm. There's always a binding, and they have different, so those different forms of magnesium have different absorbability, they have different potencies. Usually magnesium oxide is the cheapest, least absorbed, but you get the biggest dose, so that is balanced. And glycinate's a really good one, but you don't get a very high dosage of it, but it's a very good one.
Well, it is definitely
more than the brand. I'm talking about what it's bound with.
Yes,
because there are good
brands. I understand. It helps with rest, relaxation, stress, bowels. Yeah. I mean, for a postmenopausal thyroid patient, it is the cat's meow around here. It's really the only thing I think every day. That my progesterone. I think I have to have this today in order to be nice and live to make it through today. Johnny, you're incredible. Everyone needs to get the book. You need to get a copy, send it to your provider. You need to have your husband hear it or listen to it or read it. Your grandmother, your 13-year-old daughter, who they're telling to, well, don't tell her. Don't scare her. Don't let her think that she should even get on cholesterol medicine. But this is valuable advice. And
not to be in any way a defender of statins. But if you had a doctor, like, for example, my cardiologist, who's really functional medicine and really knows it's not a statin push or anything, and he or she were to look at your numbers and look at the right numbers, the particle numbers, and, you know, all of these things and say, you know, I think a low-dose statin thrown into this mix might be good. I take that advice. What I hate is the Dr. Jones, cholesterol is 206. You need to be on a statin or I fire you. That I want to just strangle with my bare hands.
I'll go with you. When
Peter Thiel looks at my numbers and tells me, he's a much bigger fan of statin. But, you know, he's also a god and I'm not. So.
Right. He's good at what he does.
I'm not contradict him.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Great interview. I've been trying a long time to get you on my podcast.
Easy to get. Just write me an email. I say yes.
Well, I know it was so easy, but I had a hard time tracking you down at first.
They
then I saw you again.
Me. I don't know why.
I was like, I'm getting him now. Thank you so much for being here and doing this.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Lisa Fisher Said podcast. If you would leave a review and follow the show. This podcast is produced by ClantonCreative.com.